Our next speaker is Leonard Pottering, showing off the systemd user database API.
Okay. Hi. I guess it's not my usual crowd, but yeah, I have a particular reason why I want to talk here, which is like I kind of want to make more visible what systemd actually provides in the user database area. So my hope is that the various providers of user records would actually implement this, and we can kind of come to a more modern logic for registering users in the system that can provide more metadata and where we don't trample on each other's feet as much anymore. So to summarize what I'm going to talk about this in the talk, it's actually cut off there. So if your project provides user records to Linux systems, I would invite you to consider just implementing systemd's IO systemd user database wireling IPC API for it. That's kind of the whole reason why I'm here. So what is this IO systemd.userdatabase thing? It's a Wirelink IPC API. It knows three massive calls. One is called get user record. It's basically you provide a username or UID and returns you some JSON structure that is actually the user record. One's called get group record, and I'm pretty sure you can guess what that's it. It's about returning, like you give a GID or a group name and it returns you a JSON Unix group record. And then there's memberships, which basically you specify either a group or a user, or maybe even both, and will tell you the relationships, like who's in that group or who's in which groups a user is. Any service can implement this API to provide user or group records to the system, to your Linux system, right? Systemd implements a couple of ways, but everybody else could do the same thing. Before we continue talking, I want to, by the way, if any one of you has questions, I really like it if we can have an interactive thing here going, so do interrupt me and show up and we'll... Sorry? Like the users, like the question was regarding what memberships means here, like users are members of groups, right? And groups have members, which are users, right? And the memberships just show you the relationships. So you specify either user and then we'll return you the groups, or you specify a group and we'll return you user, or you specify both and then we'll return you Boolean if that's the way or not. It's very simple. So, well, let's take a step back. I mentioned this word Wirelink there. Wirelink is an IPC system. It's like Dbus, but so much simpler and easier and I guess in a way more modern. It's based simply around SockStream sockets like AF Unix stuff with JSON marshalling, and it's really, really simple. Really, really simple. Much, much simpler than Dbus. It has many benefits. I mean, I did talks at other conferences just why Wirelink is actually a nice thing. But for us, the really essential stuff is, you know, user records need to be resolvable really early during boot. And they also need to be resolvable for Dbus itself to run. Hence, Dbus is not really an option for us because Dbus comes late. And Dbus talking to itself to resolve user records is never going to work. So, Wirelink has many, many benefits, too many to list. The S-traceable stuff is awesome, rich type system. It's kind of compatible with the web world, but still is kind of low level, so that kind of makes sense to build an operating system with. So yeah, we like it a lot in systemd. We're slowly moving away a little bit from Dbus. Like all the new APIs, we kind of prefer using Wirelink. Dbus is not going to die. It's just going to be, yeah, we kind of want to shift the focus for the new stuff more to Wirelink. It has been used in systemd since systemd 2.4.2, initially internally. But now public too. We have 23 APIs defined by now that just use Wirelink and systemd. And to compare that, 14 APIs have been with Dbus. So we kind of like, yeah, it's a lot easier to add Wirelink APIs to things than it is to Dbus, because Dbus kind of implies a multiplex, like you basically have to have a big event loop. And for many simple things, that's just annoying. So yeah, anyway. This is not supposed to be talk about Wirelink so much, just the summary is it's an IPC system, we like it, and it's simpler than Dbus. So how does IO systemd user database work? If you have a service that wants to provide user records to the system, all you do, you bind an AF Unix sock stream socket to that place, / run systemd userdb, and then a name of your choice. And you implement these three functions aforementioned. And there you go, it's done. Systemd will do the rest for you. Like for everything the systemd will do, it will go through that directory and in parallel ask all the stream sockets that are in there for a resolution and then take up the results. Yeah, it's dead simple. So to explain this in more detail, if a client wants to resolve a user, it iterates through all the sockets that are there, connects to all of them in parallel. Each time it issues the same request, usually get user record or something like this. And yeah, the first positive reply is used, or and the remaining queries are simply terminated. Except if you do enumeration, right? Like if you have an unspecified request, you neither specify UID nor a username, then of course we'll wait for the whole thing to respond. So this is way simpler than Glibc NSS. You know, Glibc NSS, for those who lack the context, is like this way how traditionally all these enterprise identity systems got their users registered locally. Glibc NSS is a C-based plugin API by Glibc itself. It is quite complex, right? Like because, I mean, honestly, I think there are very few people in this world who actually properly really understand NSS, because it comes with this programming language that is etsy nssswitch.conf. And I call it a programming language because it has like code flow expressions, right? You can say invoke that NSS module, and then depending on the results, go to the next module, or yeah. It's surprisingly complex for some things that sound simple. In this stuff, this does not exist, right? Like there is no hierarchy of stuff. There's just, yeah, we issue it in parallel. Makes it simple, makes it robust, right? Like because yeah, everything is timed out, not synchronous. There's no C plugin stuff involved. Yeah, there's nothing to program. There's no careful ordering of which do you query first. We just query them all in parallel. This is actually key, right? Like the fact that we call everything in parallel. Yeah, because then it doesn't really matter what's on the back end. Like if you have some slow programming language, like more Python stuff, it's totally fine for your stuff. You're not gonna slow down anything else by that. Of course, the users and groups that you define in that Python program are always going to be resolved through you, so we'll always wait for that. But all the other users are gonna be entirely unaffected. This, of course, only works under the assumption that user record collisions are resolved independently, right? In NSS, because you have this programming language that you ask this first and this second, this third, it's a first one wins situation typically, except that you have this programming language to make it more complex. But yeah, this stuff doesn't have any of this, right? Like because we ask everything in parallel and we take the first positive answer, there is no overriding or anything, right? Like I think that's a good thing because, you know, if user records conflict, right? Like if there are two user records that are owned by different subsystems, using the same usernames or the same user IDs, that's fatal. That means basically that the security model goes outside of the window because both the username and the user ID are relevant for authentication and for access control. And if that's not unique, your security thing has a problem. So the assumption with all of this is, yeah, you dealt with your collisions independently. You made sure that the UID that you allocated, the UID range that you allocated from, is not the UID anything else that wants to register user records is allocating from. Same thing for the usernames. This parallel querying, I can explain that very easily to you, but if you actually start implementing this, of course, it's going to be a little bit more complex because you need to synchronously queue multiple sockets and things like this. To make this easier for most programming languages, there's also one special service. It also is in that directory, and that one's, we call it the multiplexer. You can, instead of asking everyone in parallel, you can just ask that one just once, and it will do the parallel thing in the background and give you the response back. So this is like kind of the simple interface for the little bit of complexity that it is to issue the requests in parallel. Yeah. It's a single method call in this case, no parallel stuff, very, very easy. My recommendation would actually be for like high-level programming languages that want to use user record resolution, maybe consider using this instead of always going to Glibc and wrapping the NSS. That's a question.
Is multi-factor authentication possible with this system?
If multi-factor authentication is possible in the system, what's the question? No, because this is not about authentication. This is about registering user records and group records and the memberships between them. That's it. I mean, we'll talk a little bit later about the user record format that we're using, which can carry information about this, but this does not do authentication. It's not PAM or anything like this. This is really about the NSS stuff. It's kind of a modern reinterpretation of what Glibc NSS does. There's another question. Yep, so the question was regarding change notification, right? Like, does this cover change notification with the user database? And no, it does not, right? But the concept of Varlink, of course, allows you to do this, except that right now, with the backends that we have, none of them support this really in a nice way. Like, at least I'm not aware. We can definitely add this, though, right? Like, I'm not sure how realistic this is. Like, in an enterprise scenario, if you have 10,000 users and you always get notifications when a user gets anywhere in the enterprise, that's not going to scale. But I'm fully aware that some people want this. We can totally extend this, right? Like, right now it's these three functions, because these are one-to-one the three functions that NSS basically, the function that NSS exposes. But this doesn't mean we can go beyond that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you might not want firewalls with everything, but at least a way to choose to turn it on, or maybe you really,
I mean, I think that would be useful, and the fact that some backends are never going to support it, it should not be a reason to never support it, right? Like, seems like a thing we could do.
If you try to use NSS, will they also get the entries from the...
Yes. Okay, I'm not going to answer that. Yeah, but I'm not going to repeat this nor answer this, because I have a slide about this later. okay, so let's talk about the user records. I kind of briefly mentioned that these calls return these user records. So let's talk a little bit about what these user records are actually like. These are JSON user records that we invented. I invented most of the formats. We wrote a spec about it. Like, this is where you find it. It's inspired by struct passwd and struct s, like the shadow password entries. It has basically everything that's in there is directly translatable to fields in the JSON stuff. Sometimes a little bit more normalized, but generally that's all there. It's also inspired by RFC 2307. That's the one that the LDAP people use for their user records, like the Unix, what's it called again? Unix account or something, it's a stuff called. So that we can also map that thing very nicely. But it has many additional fields. I mean, don't read through all of this, it's just all there. It's like, there's resource management, there's metadata, there's stuff for authentication, as you asked. Who was that again? That one, you were that. There's a stop, lots of things there that you can configure. Is your user records are supposed to be extensible? So there's another question.
Yeah, so you were advising that if you are going to roll your own records provider, then please use this API. But if I manage a fleet of servers, which should all have send user records, because I want my users to be able to locate, which is centrally managed, currently we are still using this. I have to migrate away from that. But then instead of rolling my own identity provider, should I not just use something like free IPA instead?
Okay, the question was regarding why this, if there's free IPA, I think is kind of the summary of what you're saying. You shouldn't choose. This is not free IPA replacement or anything like this, because it has no understanding of anything remote. This is about a local IPC system, so that things like a free IPA, or more specifically probably SSSD, could register their more complex records locally. So this is explicitly not about remote identity management or anything like this. This is just about the last part of it. Right, like when on the individual system, some thing like SSSD, whatever else, wants to provide these records, that they can integrate it with systemd and the rest of the world.
And one thing that Leonard already said in the beginning, that extending NSS API is a nightmare. Effectively, you go in through the POSIX standard and all these ways down to there, and this is a new API that is supposed to be blending data from multiple sources plus the data that is not accessible through the other sources. If your application is interested in that additional data, that's a proposed way to get that information for the applications and for the providers to supply that data. Later today we will have a local authentication hub talk where we will cover a few bits of it, how we want to use this together with the authentication details, including the multi-factor stuff and
So yeah, let me continue with this. So these user records are extensible, right? You know, it's a JSON thing. Everybody can put their fields in there. We are totally open of adding fields there, like in particularly generic fields that there's a big expectation that it's going to be used all around the world for many different things. We can add that to the specification itself, but it's not limited to this. Because it's JSON, we kind of invite people to add their own fields for local deployments or for whatever software you have. Just give the field some prefix that makes it recognizable, like do some little bit of namespacing there. But ultimately, it's designed to be specified that everybody can just add random stuff to their user records if they want. But there's a large body of standardized fields that you're supposed to use as well. What's also essential is there are no more sidecars. The user record is kind of comprehensive, right? It will store both the stuff from that's traditionally in etc passwd and the stuff that's in the shadow file. Plus, it will also store things like SSH authentication keys that are traditionally in a third sidecar in your home directory called authorized keys, right? So it can cover all these things at a central place. Now you might wonder, okay, there's a reason why passwd and shadow is separated, right? Like it's about access to these things because they were afraid that the hash passwords that are stored in shadow could be broken if everybody can see them. We actually replicate that thing, so the user records are actually not just plain JSON objects. They're JSON objects have a tiny bit of structure in there, like there's sub-objects basically. And the main part contains the stuff that is everybody should be able to have access to who has access to the system, but then there's a separate section, if you so will, with a privilege part. There's actually even more stuff, like for example, these user records cannot just record like the more static information about a user, they can actually also report something about resource usage and things like that. Like for example, a backend, like one of the backends that provides this, for example, HomeD, reports disk sizes, like how much space does the home directory of the user actually currently take up as part of the user record. And this is also a separate section because this is stuff that is not stored in disk ever. It has only makes sense on the local system at a very temporary place. So there are also per machine sections, by the way, which is kind of nice too, because it basically means you can have a single static record, but you can also have a subsection that only applies to one machine and not the other machines. So they can do even stuff like you're having a generic record and then having the UID assigned, for example, local to the machine. So it's all expressible with this, and we actually make use of this.
So we have a question about from the matrix about the privilege specific access based on the client that asks for attributes, and I guess you want to expand about on this.
On the security, like, so the query, basically it's if you do a lookup, because you know it's an AF Unix socket, we can identify who you are. The kernel will just tell us, and then we will suppress the shadow information basically. Unless you're root or you are yourself, right? So this kind of replicates how this works in shadow, except that there's no suite or weird shit like in shadow. It's all by IPC primitives. Let's have a brief closer look to all of this. This is like the implementation that is in systemd homed, which is one of the providers of these user records. You see we're using here the Varlink control tool, which is like a command line tool that allows you to talk to Varlink servers and see what they actually provide. It just introspects that service. This is one of those sockets that I mentioned, and it shows you, it implements the IO system, the user database interface that I'm talking about. I cut off all of kind of stuff here because I didn't want to crowd the slide so much, but yeah, the key is that you see this massive call cat user record. It gets a user ID as input, it's an optional input, it gets a username as input, it's an optional one. You also specify the service that you're talking to. This is kind of redundant, but we require this simply because we wanted to allow that single daemons can implement multiple services, and then they need to know which service is actually being talked to, right? Like, so that you can have a single socket that provides three different services that provide user records. You can ignore this. And then it returns the record, which is like this user record that I was talking about. And it, with a Boolean incomplete, it indicates whether the privilege section was cut off, right? So you know that you're lacking access to the full thing, and you only see the unprivileged stuff. So that's kind of all that's what it is about, like about the technical details. Like, yeah, play around with things, you will see this. Why should you do this again? Like, first of all, systemd will care about these user records a lot, and it will provide you the compatibility in both ways with classic libc NSS, right? So you get compatibility just by binding that socket. It will show up in glibc NSS calls. And the other way around is too, by the way, as well. Like, if there's something registered via NSS, it would automatically get these user records in JSON synthesized on the fly when they're requested. There's also instant exposure to SSH public keys to SSH, right? Like, so this thing that I mentioned earlier was the authorized key stuff, right? We have all the glue in place so that if you provide this and the fields are filled in, then SSHD will know this and allow access. There is components in systemd that will do all the resource management stuff. Like, you know, there's quite a bit of it, like nice values, environment variables, resource management. All this stuff can be encoded in user records. And you can even do it in the user records per machine, right? Like, because we have these per machine sections. And we will just enforce it for you, right? Like, because systemd does all the resource management anyway. So you can basically say, yeah, this user, when they log in on that machine, they can only have one CPU or something like this, and we just work. What's also important, it's better control about the disposition of your user records. The disposition is a concept, I mean, you could call it a type or a class of user, but we didn't want to use that word because it has so many other definitions. So we use the word disposition, but it basically is a really broad categorization what kind of user we are talking about. Disposition can be something like a system user, right? Like, was UID below 1000 or something. It could be a regular user, which is somebody, a human, and can be a couple of other things. Like, there's user deassignments for containers, user namespace stuff, and things like that. So there are, I think there are 7 or something dispositions these days. Why does this matter? This matters because in systemd, depending on what kind of user we're talking about, behavior slightly changes. For example, journal D, like the logging framework of systemd, will, for system users, put all the logs in the system log, but for the real, like for the regular users, it will maintain a separate log file for each of them, so a separate journal file, right? So, right, how this was traditionally done was simply by looking at the numeric UID, right? But this collides with assumptions like, you know, old setups tend to use UIDs all over the place, right? Like, so it's not sufficient in these cases to derive the disposition simply from the numeric user ID. We need something more. With this, we finally have a way how to communicate the disposition, right? Like, so you could basically say, yes, I have user ID 500, which is below the typical 1000 limit, but you can still say this is a regular user, and that we will then care and alter our behavior through this. This is better control of default behavior, login behavior, logging behavior, all kinds of things this is used. What I also think is really important is we're kind of at this point nowadays where more and more software is not going to be written in C anymore. It's kind of moving to Rust and high-level languages. So one problem with glibc NSS, of course, is inherently a C thing, right? You can only implement it by exposing C APIs, and you can consume it only via C APIs. And in particular, the world where everything's static these days, it's kind of not the way it should be. This Varlink stuff, it doesn't talk about binary ABIs, and it's just all gone, and you don't have to load untrusted code anywhere. People can just directly ask this. Also, UserDB control, like this tool that you can actually introspect all this with, is kind of a fun tool. There's also like GNOME integration. Like, for example, the GNOME people, they're building their GNOME OS thing, and they added a lot of information to the user records, like, for example, preferred desktop choice and things like that. And then they have in the configuration UI and the preferences things, you can actually control these settings, right? Like, so that you can switch between preferred desktops and language control, like which language you actually prefer and things like this. So if your whatever enterprise thing provides all these fields to this, they will automatically then hand scan all the GNOME, like not just the systemd integration, but also GNOME integration. And I presume sooner or later all the other desktops will follow too. How much time do I actually still have? 10 minutes? Five? I have more slides. We can go through some. They're not as important. I'd much rather spend the rest of the time with questions if there are any. If there are no questions at this point, I would go for the slides. You have a question? Okay, I didn't understand that.
So you... You showed the user record implementation with all these fancy details, but is it also possible to extend the query API with whatever it is?
I have trouble understanding that. Can you speak louder?
Field. Okay, so you showed the user record, right, with all these fancy fields that are extensible by the application, but is it also possible to extend the query calls, like the three calls that you mentioned earlier, to specifically address the query designed on one of these extensible record fields?
So, so right now, in the stuff that is already in release system versions, the only two things that you can query, like user search keys are user ID and username. But in the upcoming version, we extended this. There's a filtering by UID range, and there is a fuzzy name search, so that basically, we also look at the real name for things like that. So it's in there, you can search by disposition and a couple of other things. There's aliases for user records. So we do intend to make changes to the query API, but everybody can implement whatever they want on their interface. That's true, but of course, it's only useful if this is a generic thing that is actually part of our specification. So while I would invite everybody to extend the JSON records with whatever the fuck they need, I would probably not recommend them to do this interface locally, because we are not going to ask for this unless it's in the spec, right? So the consumers of these records, the clients that actually talk to the IPC servers, are probably not going to use your extensions. But I don't know. We are happy to extend this, right? Just let me know what else you need in the stuff, like further filters or one thing that, for example, I would like to add soonishly is that we not only report information about actually existing users, but also about user allocation ranges, right? Systemd's dynamic user ID stuff for services can basically report which ranges are using, and then we can. This is interesting for allocation, for things like container managers that just need to allocate a certain range of user IDs dynamically, they can take this information into account and then avoid the ranges that are possessed by some component of the OS. I hope that answers the question.
So I think we are actually having two things here. One is use of quarreling as a means to communicate between applications. The other one is a specific use of quarreling by systemd to provide these userdb API endpoints. And I totally envision that there could be other quarreling namespaces, right, provided by the specific applications that consume and expose additional information. It may be not this multiplexer who would be collecting that information together from them, but certainly a different endpoint.
People have asked us to do things like user record modification, right? If there's actual demand about doing this, like having a generic way how to update the user records, we can look into doing this. But my assumption right now is that in particularly the enterprisey stuff, it's rather unlikely that we would trigger the user record changes from the client machine. You probably would do that through some web thing somewhere else, right? I don't know. We can certainly come up with an abstract interface covering that, but I would probably make it separate from the regular user database. But I don't know. That's just details. But we can come up with anything like what user want there. Next question. Okay, so the question was, if I can say more about the details, how the SSH key integration works. SSHD has this call-out thingy, what's it called, pub key command or something weird like this, authorized keys command or something. We implement one reference implementation, then we just go to this and pick the data out of it, and it's enabled by default by systemd. It's kind of annoying because there can only be one implementer of this in SSHD, so there's a fight. I don't know, one way to address that fight, of course, is just give me these records and I'll do it for you. If that's not in the cards, we can certainly make it so that we call further, chain load or other tools, but I'd much rather actually see that people just give us user records. Because, if SSSD or whatever else has this information, they implement this and it was just, yeah. The way I see it is that I would really prefer if things like SSSD would just give us the data and we do the integration with the rest of the work. like lower level system stuff, than all of us trying to do this deep integration and fighting over priorities and fighting about who owns what if there's a singleton and things like this. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, if you want to start working with Wildlink either as a client or as a server and trying to understand it, you normally first use the Wildlink CTL command. But there is absolutely no documentation how to actually use it to make these calls with the multiplexer. It took me an hour to read through the source code to figure out how to just call it and get and do a,
like at C, you mean?
No, with the Wildlink CTL command.
Well, I mean,
to understand it.
Well, it's actually pretty easy. Like, didn't I? I have the only introspection call there. But
yeah, if you figure out how to do it, it's really easy. But it takes you an hour to read the source code to understand it. So it would be great to have a few examples.
Regarding documentation, generally, we have these specifications up on this thing, but they, of course, my time's up. But anyway, there's documentation. You can read this. I'm pretty, you know, there's big holes of documentation. Like, for example, particularly once you talk to about Wildlink and the C API that we provide to do the big Wildlink, there's no documentation right now. It's relatively recently become a public thing. But if there's really some issue that you're seeing, just ping us and we'll see if we can do something about this. But yeah.